Rape, murder, war. They all have one thing in common. Men. Aggression, violence, ambition unchecked by conscience, all the stuff of toxic masculinity, right? And the solution is obvious. Make men less toxic. Make men less masculine. Make men more like women. But I'm here to tell you that that way of thinking is not only wrong, it's dangerous. Here's why. When you try to make men more like women, you don't get less toxic masculinity. You get more. Why? Because bad men don't become good when they stop being men. They become good when they stop being bad. Aggression, violence, and unbridled ambition can't be eliminated from the male psyche. They can only be harnessed. And when they are harnessed, they are tools for good, not for harm. The same masculine traits that bring destruction also defeat tyranny. The traits that foster greed also build economies. The traits that drive men to take foolish risks also drive men to take heroic risks. The answer to toxic masculinity isn't less masculinity. It's better masculinity. And we know what that looks like. It's a young man opening the door for a girl on their first date. It's a father working long hours to provide for his family. It's a soldier risking his life to defend his country. The growing problem in today's society isn't that men are too masculine. It's that they're not masculine enough. When men embrace their masculinity in a way that is healthy and productive, they are leaders, warriors, and heroes. When they deny their masculinity, they run away from responsibilities, leaving destruction and despair in their wake. The consequences can be seen everywhere. 1 in 4 fathers now lives apart from his children. And children who grew up without a dad are generally more depressed than their peers who have a mother and a father. They are at far greater risk for incarceration, teen pregnancy, and poverty. 71% of high school dropouts are fatherless. Of all the rocks upon which we build our lives, family is the most important. And we are called to recognize and honor how critical every father is to that foundation. That was said by then-Senator Barack Obama in 2008. If we are honest with ourselves, he went on, we'll admit that too many fathers are missing from too many lives and too many homes. As much as we try to deny the need for real masculine strength in society, there's no denying its necessity. Healthy families and strong communities depend on the leadership and bravery of good men. Yet, the current trend is to feminize young men in the hopes of achieving some utopian notion of equality and peace. And it starts at the earliest ages. In the school classroom, boys are invariably the problem. On the playground, aggressive games like dodgeball have long been banished. We tell young men that their intrinsic desire to compete is wrong. Everybody gets a trophy. Don't run up the score. This anti-male tilt continues on through higher education and into the workplace. It has created millions of tentative men, unhappy women, and confused boys and girls. Here's a secret that every woman knows. Women want real men. Men they can count on and, yes, look up to. No amount of feminist theory will change that. I don't know any woman at any age who is attracted to a passive man who looks to her to be his provider, protector, and leader. Every woman I know wants a strong, responsible man. That's not a consequence of a social construct or cultural pressure. It's innate. The devaluation of masculinity won't end well because feminine passive men don't stop evil. Passive men don't defend, protect, or provide. Passive men don't lead. Passive men don't do the things we have always needed men to do for society to thrive. In his book, The Abolition of Man, English social philosopher C.S. Lewis writes about this problem. He describes the tension between cerebral man and visceral man. By his intellect, Lewis explains, man is mere spirit, and by his appetite, mere animal. We need both. Take away one, and you're left with a man who's either weak or wicked. And in a world of wickedness, weak men are nothing more than enablers of wicked men. Rape, murder, war. They all have two things in common. Bad men who do the raping, murdering, and warring, and weak men who won't stop them. We need good men who will. It's not masculinity that's toxic. It's the lack of it. I'm Allie Stuckey for Prager University.
Wow. Sometimes you need a woman to help you remember why you need to be the kind of man that we're challenging you to be. And I hope that that was a point of encouragement and motivation and maybe a voice that goes against the current and the trends of our current culture to speak to you about some of the very things I'm trying to talk to you about and trying to challenge in you, and that is the fact that we are trying to ask and answer the question, where are the men? Where are the men? In Ezekiel, in the Old Testament, there is a passage of Scripture that says, "And I sought for a man among them who would build up the wall and stand in the breach before me for the land, that I should not destroy it, but I found none." And Edmund Burke, who was the British, both writer, philosopher, and a part of the House of Commons in those days, once said this: "The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing." And guys, one of the things that I'm trying to address with you is the need for us to do something. To do something about our character, to do something about our commitments, to do something that will really be a part of positive change, beginning in our families and communities, and then ultimately beyond that in our nation and in our world. And so, without men, good men, godly men, destructive forces are rampant in our world. And therefore, we want to do everything that we can to call men to be men of passion and men of conviction and men of compassion. And I hope that that's been a part of what we've been doing in these days. We've been talking about men and their emotions. And while men are often portrayed as being a group of people who are without as much emotion as they are action, the truth is every man is driven by what's going on inside, his emotional condition and well-being. And men are very emotional, and the health of their emotions has everything to do with the kind of men that they are and the kind of lives that they lead. And so for that reason, we've been addressing and tackling this issue of men and their emotions. First, I just want to say thank you. Thank you so much for the way that you have participated and supported and been a part of this men's forum. Without a doubt, from a gathering standpoint, this has been our strongest and best. And I want you just to give yourselves a hand and give each other a word of encouragement for being here and being a part of this together. It's been fantastic. And I just want to echo, I know we've already affirmed them, but I just want to echo my own appreciation for the men who get up and provide breakfast for us. This really is a major work to get accomplished before the 6:30 hour in the morning and the hour that they open these food lines. And I'm so thankful for these men. One of the greatest blessings in my life in ministry is that Craig Canada, who oversees our food service here, over the last 2 years went through one of the worst battles imaginable with leukemia and a stem cell transplant. And really, there were a lot of touch-and-go moments in his life. But the Lord has strengthened and restored Craig, and he's here, and he's served you this morning. And I'm just so grateful for this friend and for his influence here. All right, so let's get right to it this morning, because this is the last of our four lessons on the subject of manly men and their emotions. And these are the subjects we've looked at. We've talked about happiness. We've talked about sadness. We've talked about anxiety. And last week, we spent a significant amount of time talking through this dynamic of anxiety. And I did use the resource from Tommy Newberry, The 4-8 Principle is the book that we talked about and I shared things from. And that is where this information about the joy challenge comes from. And so let me just get that back on the screen one more time. There are cards there on your table. So this is a 40-day sort of a resource for you to use in your life. And so while Men's Forum will end after this morning until our next one, for the next 40 days, you can be a part of an experience that will help you to be able to strengthen your patterns of thinking, the positive use of the energy of your life living forward, and to build you up in the faith. And so this is just a simple daily resource that's available, and it is free of charge. There is no hook that we're trying to put in you. This is something we're just trying to give you because we have a unique friendship and relationship, as Drew has already mentioned, with Charlie Finch, who's one of the teaching coaches with Tommy Newberry. And so I just want to be sure that you pick that up, that you write that down. Main thing you've got to have is the joychallenge.com website, and then you just need to be able to put in there what is Warren Baptist Joy, I believe is the password that is there. You'll see it on the back of that card, and you can do that. Of course, all these notes for all of these sessions, along with videos, are posted on our website. So if you miss something, you can always go back to the website and find these sort of things as they're there. So happiness, sadness, anxiety, we dealt with last week, and today we're going to talk about anger. Anger. What are the propellants of your life? Curious about that. What are the propellants? What are the things that light you up, set you off, get you going in life? I'm curious to know about that, because if there is one thing that is very clear about men, it is that we have a lot of angry men in our world today. We are living in a culture that is filled with rage and with anger. And so many of us are struggling with dealing with the issues of anger. And while not all anger is expressed in rage, though we see a lot of rage, all anger tends to bring to us both depressive and destructive impact and influence in our lives. And so the issue of anger is a very important issue for us to deal with. Interestingly enough, it is a thematic quality and a thematic characteristic that we read about when we go back and read about men in the Bible. There are a whole list of men who, when you think about their lives and the events that shaped them, they all had to do with anger. I think about Cain. I think about Esau. I think about Moses. Moses was an incredible man, an incredible leader. He was a good man by so many means and measures, and yet there was a day and a time in his life, a season of life, where anger over the rebellion of the people that he was trying to lead just got under his skin, and there was a day where he acted out publicly and ultimately defied and shamed the Lord publicly in an action that he did, and his anger ultimately had the consequence of preventing him from leading the people all the way into the promised land. There was Balaam, there was King Saul, there was Absalom, King Ahab, certainly Pilate, who we read about in the Christmas story and in the New Testament. And so all of these things, as we go forward, we read about men whose lives are impacted by anger and the destructive power of unguarded and unyielding anger. So let's talk for just a few moments this morning about what does unbridled anger do? What does unbridled anger do? Well, first, anger causes us to act foolishly. When you get mad, when you get set off, when you blow your stack, lose your head, whatever you want to call it, the result is usually not a good result. Typically, what happens is that we act out foolishly. Listen to Proverbs 14:16. One who is wise is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is reckless and careless. A man of quick temper acts foolishly, and a man of evil devices is hated. And then verse 29 of that same chapter. Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding. But he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. There is a tremendous temptation in our lives to not just let people wonder if we're fools, but to prove it when we get mad, and that we show them and let them see us living this out. Albert Einstein said, "How much more grievous are the consequences of anger than the causes of it?" How much more grievous are the consequences of anger than the causes of it? I have a little video that I want you to see this morning of a guy who I think kind of proves the point. So just pay attention here. Just a few seconds of something that I want you to be able to see and I want you to be able to identify with here in this moment.
All right, Dan, what you got?
One more.
Oh my God.
Okay, so how many of you have ever been on a golf course and felt that way, huh? But can I tell you the worst part of that video? It was when he got back to the car and realized that his keys were in that golf bag when he got back. That was the worst part of that video, was realizing the keys were in the bag. You talk about being foolish. One is wasting your money, the other's having to deal with the humility of that. And so it's a big part of something that is proven in our lives. Psalm 37:8, refrain from anger and forsake wrath. Fret not yourself, it tends only to evil. Again, listening to James 1, verse 19. Know this, my beloved brothers. Let every person be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not produce the righteousness of God. Benjamin Franklin said, whatever is begun in anger ends in shame. And in many of our lives, unbridled anger is nothing more than something that causes us to act foolishly. Secondly, unbridled anger injures people that matter in our lives. It injures people that matter in our lives. That's why, again, I go back to Proverbs 15:1 that says, a soft answer turns away wrath, but harsh words stir up anger. We all know this, don't we? We all know that when tension's building and conflict is there, that when you poke that fire, you're going to create a bigger explosion than if you find a way to allay that anger and that wrath that tends to rise up. Verse 18 of that same chapter says this as well. It says, a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. Quiets contention. Proverbs 29:22. I just want you to see how much the Bible has to say about this subject and how frequently it speaks directly to the struggle we have with it. A man of wrath stirs up strife, and one giving to anger causes much transgression. You create a lot of turbulence and turmoil in your life when anger is unbridled, and especially with those who are closest to you. To your family, your children. I think it's very interesting that in the book of Ephesians, when God speaks to us about family life, He tells children that they're to obey their parents, to honor their father and mother. But very interesting in that same passage in Ephesians chapter 4, the same passage tells us as well at the very beginning, chapter 6 and verse 4, the Bible tells us this. It says, fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. Do not provoke your children to anger. Does that mean you should never say no to your child and they're going, they're just not going to pitch temper tantrums? No, you're going to have to say no to your child. When the Bible says do not provoke your children, it's not talking about limiting them. It's talking about you living like a terror in the home so that what you create in them is a sense of shame and a sense of frustration and anger that will be lived out in their lives. And that's why your role as a father and the control of your spirit and of your mind and your emotions is so important with your home and with your family and in all of that. And so we have to understand that unbridled anger causes us to act foolishly. Unbridled anger injures people that matter in our lives. And then unbridled anger consumes the energy and the health of our bodies. Nothing can be more destructive to your body than unbridled anger. What it does to your blood pressure, what it does to your heart, what it does to so many other parts of your being. And so it's an important thing to recognize. Mark Twain once said, anger is an acid that can do more harm to the vessel in which it is stored than to anything on which it is poured. There was wisdom in that. And then anger opens the door to strongholds of sin and bondage. Anger opens the door to strongholds of sin and bondage. Listen to Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26 and 27. Be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger. And what is the result of that? Give no opportunity to the devil. If you want to leave a door open in your life for destruction, for you and for those that you love, then you just let anger be something that you never deal with, that you never hold in check, that you never address in life, because it opens a door to strongholds and to destruction. Again, in the book of Hebrews, one more passage, Hebrews chapter 12, 15. See to it that no one fails to obtain the grace of God, and that no root of bitterness springs up and causes trouble, and by it many become defiled. That no one is sexually immoral or unholy like Esau, who sold his birthright for a single meal. The Bible says that one of the primary reasons that men give themselves to sinful, immoral patterns of behavior. You want to know why we are driven toward pornography and why we get involved with other people? Many times, it is even not just the lust of it, it is the anger that drives us to those destructive impulses and tendencies. And that anger has not been dealt with. It has been suppressed and has been left open. And when that is left open in life, it becomes a stronghold for demonic forces in your life, for a bondage that you won't be able to break out of. And then anger is a leading cause of depression and suicide. This is a really big deal, man. You want to know why we're seeing so many patterns of depression and of suicidal tendencies going on? And we see this with men. And one of the reasons of that is because of the issue of anger. Michael Formica wrote an article in Psychology Today, and he said this. He said, for the most part, men have two speeds, neutral and ticked. Experience demonstrates that the state of rage that plagues the majority of the male population is driven less by genuine anger and more by what we might characterize as covert depression manifesting itself as anger. Covert depression doesn't look like the depression with which we're generally familiar, especially to the people around a man who is in the throes of this particular emotional upheaval. Instead, what the people around us tend to witness is subtle irritation, road rage, explosive arguments, passive aggressiveness, slovenness, self-sabotage, supported by a failure to follow through and or a faint sense of insecurity that leads to all kinds of shortcomings in performance at work, at home, within society at large, and even in the bedroom. Wow, what a powerful statement that is. Because so much of what is impacting our lives is this issue of anger. So what does unbridled anger do? It destroys your life. It destroys your life. So let's talk a little bit further about the subject, and let's ask this question. Why does anger rule? Why is it that anger is so dominant and rules in so many of our lives? What is it that allows us to feel the right, the justification, the comfort level, if you will, with anger? I picked up a number of these observations from a book written by Patrick Morley. The book is entitled Man in the Mirror. If you don't have that book, don't know about that book, I would really encourage you to go to Amazon today and pick up a copy, even a used copy of it. Man in the Mirror. It's an excellent book. It was written probably 2 to 3 decades ago, but it's probably one of the best books for men in all of my library that I have. But in that book, he talks about the things that cause men to justify anger in their lives. So let's just give that list. Number one, the violation of our rights. We all believe that we have certain rights to a place, to a space, to a pace of life. And whenever we feel like that's being violated, we respond to it. They tell us that 18 inches in front of our face is personal space. And anybody that gets closer than 18 inches, they better get ready to either kiss you or get hit, right? I mean, it's one of the two, because we don't like people to invade our space. Men are incredibly territorial. Just watch male dogs if you don't know that. But I say that to say that we have a tendency to let the fact that we think people are invading our space, our place, our pace of life. And when that happens, we justify anger because of the violation of rights. And that's something we would deal with. Secondly, we get mad because of blocked goals. I'm not where I want to be. I'm not doing what I want to do. I'm struggling with what I perceive that I've become in life. And so almost from a mild simmer to a full boil, men begin to struggle. We heat up inwardly because we have our goals blocked. Three, personal irritations and preferences. This especially can be true with our spouses. We have little behavioral things that we do, that they do, and sometimes those little continual irritations cause us to be not only irritable, but to give outburst with them. And so as a result of that, our personal irritations and preferences, when they're not fulfilled, we struggle with that in life. Number four, when we feel falsely maligned or misunderstood. Feeling falsely maligned or misunderstood. We try our best to do all that we can to do what is right and to do what is good. And instead of being affirmed, we get criticized. We get targeted. We get put down. I don't know about you, but I'm praying much about the events that are unfolding in our nation today with the appointment of the next Supreme Court justice. And while I certainly do not know Brett Kavanaugh and his background, I don't know the man, I can't speak for that. I do imagine what it must be like to have the whole of your character maligned publicly and to find that an accusation could go so far as to create the kind of events that have unfolded. Now again, let me just quickly say, never, as should we as men, put down the issue of sexual assault or sexual abuse. Never should we do that. Never should we tolerate that. We need to be good men who are defenders of women who have been the prey of that. But at the same time, I would say to you that we need to be very careful about allowing the accusation of such to assassinate the character of someone as well. And so I say that to you today to say that I believe that the greatest concern that I have today is not even so much what happens with Judge Kavanaugh, but what's happening with the character of our nation. That's where my concern is. Because I'm standing in front of you today to tell you that if the same litmus test were put on every person who serves in the House and the Senate, we could vacate Washington tomorrow. We really could. And there are not two standards of moral and ethical evaluation. Either you are or you aren't. And we just need to be very careful about a culture that is creating its own narrative over and over and over again that is so destructive to the lives of so many. Nothing is more important in our nation than who these next Supreme Court justices will be. I have lived in the wake of a rogue court. I say that beginning with Roe versus Wade. I say that because of the abortion on demand that has been nothing more than the defense and the suppression of immorality and a means to provide for it after the consequence of sexual activity. Now, I'm not saying that there are not a lot of other life issues involved in people's lives, but I'm saying to you, we have justified the killing of the unborn in America, and so deep is the commitment to defend that, that we will destroy anything to provide for it. And so I'm just saying to you that I can't help but imagine how mad I would be if this were me. That's all I can say. And while, again, I don't know. I don't know the man. I can't speak for that. I can only say that in the last 30 years, the reputation has been different. And certainly the day in court is coming for an accuser to make known what may be an offense. And if so, it should be exposed. But having said that, men, one of the things that we've got to do is to defend our lives by continuing to do and to be who we are in character and do what is right and do what is true and to do what is faithful so that we do not perpetuate the causes of so much of this deception and deceit that is going on within our society. John J. Reynolds said this, "Always remember that when you are in the right, you can afford to keep your temper. And when you are in the wrong, you cannot afford to lose your temper." There's a lot of wisdom in that. And so if you're in the right on something right now, you're not on the national stage, you're not being accused of something salacious, you're a man who, though, is being misunderstood and misjudged, if you're in the right, then you are going to have to fight. But be sure that you guard your temper in that fight. If you're in the right, you don't have to lose your temper. You can keep your temper. You can be steadfast. You can be continuous. And when you're in the wrong, you can't afford to lose your temper because of all the things that we've already looked at here today. Well, that's a lot more commentary than you wanted on anything else this morning, but I just felt like I needed to say that and you needed to hear that.
We needed to hear it. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Number five, unrealistic expectations. Why do we allow anger to rule? Because we have unrealistic expectations. When people we know and trust and depend on fail to meet our expectations, we all have a tendency to have unrealistically high expectations. And the result of that is that we expect for them to give us plenty of margin and understanding for us. And when people don't meet our needs, we are very frustrated. Henry Brandt, kind of the grandfather of Christian counseling movement, said this. He said, other people don't create your spirit, they only reveal it. In other words, whatever's in the cup's going to come out when it's shaken. And whenever whatever happens in you gets shaken, it spills out and has an impact on others. And so we need to understand that a lot of times the anger that spills out is because we're just bearing and harboring unrealistic expectations in our lives. Then number six, there are pathological and psychological issues that tend to move us toward anger. What do I mean by that? That there are some who have illness and emotional disorders where the anger that is going on in them is being caused by other physiological or chemical issues going on in life. And if you really are finding that you're tipping over a lot and living in the ticked off mode, one, you need to evaluate what is it that's happening, but certainly you may need evaluation as well. And I say that because of the tendency of anger, when it is left unchecked, to lead to depression and destruction in life. And such an important issue for us to guard and to keep up with. All right, well, we've asked two questions. We've asked the question about what does unharnessed anger do, and we've asked and answered the question, why does anger rule in our lives? Let's wrap this up this morning by asking the question, how can anger be harnessed? How can we harness our anger? Proverbs 29:11 says this, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. So there must be some way in which it can be held back. Now, I know we all say, look, I just can't help it. I get mad, I get ticked off, and I just respond in a moment. But have you ever been in the midst of having an argument with someone, like maybe your wife? And have you ever had the phone ring, and what do? You reach and pick up that phone and go, hello? Yes, hey, how you doing? Great day, yeah, man, everything's wonderful. Don't tell me you can't harness it. You know exactly what to do. You just feel like you have the right to release it with her and to restrain it with somebody else. And so the issue is that we've got to be careful about this issue of harnessed anger. So what is it that we need to do to harness our anger and to let anger not be destructive in our lives? Let me just say this very quickly. You cannot go through life without anger. Every man in this room is a madman. You are. You know how I know that? Because you're going to get poked and pinched in life in a way in which you're going to get hurt. And the natural response to hurt is anger. Right now, put my hand here, take a hammer, hit my fingers. Now, I can do that with my hand. But if I do that with a hammer, what's going to happen when I hit that finger? Man, there's going to be a fire that is going to go of pain up my arm, and here it's going to hit my head and it's going to hit my mouth, and if I'm not careful, I might say something I've heard other people say. Some of you. I mean, hey, you know what I'm talking about. When you get hurt, your first reaction is, ugh! It's like anger. It's not like, oh, I'm so hurt. That's not what, man, when you get hurt, there's a fire, there's anger, and you react and you respond. And that's what anger does. When, whether it's physical pain or emotional pain, when we get hurt, we get mad. And the question is, how do we deal with that? First and foremost, you can't. Because of who you are, is a fallen man living in a fallen world that is engulfed with sin and brokenness. If you just try to manage your anger, you're not going to be able to do it. What you're going to do is you're going to get mad and then maybe get sad or get even. But at the end of the day, you're not going to be able to manage your anger. So how do we manage anger? First and foremost, listen to me carefully. Surrender to God. You have to daily surrender your life to God. Listen to James chapter 4, verses 6 and following. But he, that is God, gives more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Now listen to verse 7. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Do you remember that other passage we read a few minutes ago out of Ephesians 4? It says, don't let the sun go down on your wrath and give place to the devil. So how do we keep from allowing a demonic spirit, as though it were the spirit of the devil, to get in us and to be the rage of our lives? How do we quit acting like devils? We have to submit our lives to God. We have to surrender our lives to God. We have to go before Him. Draw near to God, and He will draw near to you. Every day of your life, one of the prayers you need to pray is, God, I ask that you guard my spirit and control my temper. Because there is such a natural tendency to let anger rule and not let God rule in your life. So it's important that we surrender our lives to God. Secondly, channel your anger toward action. Channel your anger toward actions. Anger can either just erupt and damage, or anger can be brought together and processed in life in a way that can help us to be able to benefit in life. Proverbs 16:32 says, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and the one who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. The idea is that there is to be a ruling of anger that ultimately allows you to not only rule yourself, but to be able to make a difference in the lives of others. Probably the greatest expression of this in our modern culture is the organization MADD, M-A-D-D. Mothers, what? Against drunk driving. I mean, believe me, those women are hurt and mad about those who've taken the lives of those they love. But one of the greatest things that they've done has been to mobilize and to move a campaign to try to deal with the issues of alcoholism and of public drunkenness and of all of the things that have contributed to so many different injuries and loss of life through the abuse of alcohol. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 6 kind of puts this in, 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 6 puts this sort of in light when it says, love does not rejoice in evil, but it rejoices in truth. It does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but it rejoices in truth. And therefore, what we have to be careful about is that if we love, and you do love in life, is that you don't just let the injuries that come to your life and to those that you love move you to evil. I'm going to get even. But that you would rejoice in truth, that you would fight for what is right and what is good and what is best. I mean, if you love your child, you can't rejoice if they're abusing alcohol or drugs. I mean, there's a fight in you to fight for them and to fight against those forces in life. And while you cannot necessarily personally deliver them or everyone and everything in your life, you can choose to let the anger that you feel over the destruction of deceit and over the destruction of misunderstanding and misjudgment drive you to do the right things and the best things and to move them forward. That's the whole thing that I shared with you in that Edmund Burke quote at the very beginning when we started today. The only thing necessary for the triumph of evil is for good men to do nothing. So do what's good, do what's right, do what's best. And channel the anger, the passion of your life, in a way that can be valuable. Your anger is either going to lead you to assault or to action. So choose good action. Number three, overlook daily offenses. If you want to harness your anger, part of it is you're going to have to learn to overlook daily offenses. Proverbs 19:11 says, "Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense." There are a lot of little things that are going to come your way every day that if you justify them, every one of them are just going to tick you off. And you can just tick off, tick off, tick off over and over again. But when you learn to overlook offenses that do not matter in life, that don't change the course of life, it will calm your spirit and it will ultimately help you to manage your life. Often in our home, we have 2-liter sodas. And one of the things I've learned to do is you don't just grab one and just take the top off, because I can tell you what's going to happen. They're going to blow up, right? So what you have to learn to do is just kind of turn the valve and let that thing sort of settle. Then you can pour as many glasses as you want to out of that. You can refresh instead of explode. And in much the same way, when in your life you learn to overlook offenses, you learn to sort of turn the relief valve and to let that happen. Next, forgive your grudges. Forgive your grudges. Be a person who refuses to bear grudges. Instead of walking around with an IOU in your pocket against someone, forgive those grudges. Because when you allow the grudge in your life, that grudge is going to become the master of your life. And then finally, goodness, time's out. Something got in the way today. You guys weren't listening very fast today. I knew y'all were slow when I walked in the room this morning. Finally, seek forgiveness. This message isn't just about you not getting mad at others. It's about you seeking forgiveness and apology with those in your life. Listen to Ephesians 4, 31 and 32. "Let all bitterness, wrath, anger, clamor, slander be put away from you along with all malice. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you." You have somebody for whom you may need to ask for an apology today because of your anger. And one of the greatest things you can do to harness your anger is to go to that person to say the three hardest words in the world. You know what they are, don't you? "I am sorry. I was wrong. Please forgive me." And that apology will help to strengthen your life. Here's the bottom line. Anger gets us into trouble. Pride keeps us there. Anger gets us into trouble, but it's pride that keeps us there. And therefore, the most important thing is to remember that God resists the proud. He gives grace to the humble. All right, don't forget the joy challenge. 40 days. We'll get the info back on the screen for you or back on the loop. But I hope that this has been a valuable 4 weeks in your life. It's been incredible for me. Thank you for coming. Now go out and be some good, manly men. Okay? God bless you. Take care, guys.